Trojan fans, it's time for another installment of the Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast. We give you the inside scoop on everything about USC football recruiting from the experts who know what they're talking about. Which players have an offer, which ones don't, who the coaches like, and who our experts like. And now, here are your co-hosts for the Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher Ryan Abraham and USCFootball.com national recruiting analyst Gerard Martinez.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast. It's been a minute since we've done one of these with Gerard Martinez. Follow him on Twitter at GMartLive. Of course, he's all over the peristyle, USCFootball.com message boards. Gerard, man, what's up, buddy? How you doing?
I'm doing well. Just, you know, early season, early for college football. We're already, this is what, our fourth week into the high school football season. So we've already seen three different games. I went to two games last week. But this is going to be technically week four. They have a week zero, but this is technically the fourth week of high school football. So we're already knee deep in high school football. College football season that just started, but it was nice. It was a good weekend of college football games, and you know, pretty good game last night with Florida State and Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech dominating Florida State,
yeah,
at home. That was an interesting way to start out the Willie T era at Florida State.
Yeah, maybe some recruiting impact down the road. Ed Orgeron gets a big win over Miami. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how that all transpires. Of course, USC's got a huge game this weekend up on the farm at Stanford, but we haven't had, you know, got to talk recruiting for a while. We get a lot of tweets. We get a lot of message board posts. Where are you going to do a recruiting podcast? So here we're doing one now. And, you know, we're just trying to, I'm actually skipping practice today, Gerard, so we can do this podcast because I don't feel like I've talked enough. I've done like two podcasts a day for like last week. But, you know,
Ryan is trying to shovel off the recruiting podcast to me.
Yes, that would be wonderful.
Don't have the equipment to do it. Like, if I do something, and Ryan can vouch for me, when I do something, I like to do it really well. Like, I have that sort of OCD mentality of, if you're going to do something, do it really well or don't do it at all. And so I'm not really set up to do a podcast because I know I'm going to have to talk to other people. People just want to, I mean, there's some people that would listen to me ramble on for, you know, half an hour to an hour just about recruiting by myself, just a conscious, you know, sort of me talking about recruiting and answering questions and just whatever is on my mind. But it would obviously be a better show if I had other people on it to give opinions and what have you. But that's obviously work, and that's on top of other stuff that I do. So I don't know how that would work out. I don't mind just having our own podcast and just doing it, you know, recruiting. And but then again, it's also hard for me to play the part of the expert as well, because then I have to sort of talk without anybody asking me a question,
right?
Because I would have to host it as well. So that's, you know, I don't know how that would really work out. It would be pretty narcissistic for me just to sit there and go, okay, well, let me just give you my thoughts on recruiting right now.
Well, you can answer people's questions. I do those sometimes during the season, the solo podcast. I'm probably going to do one. Today's Tuesday. So we already did the Dan Weber podcast. But
why would you need to do a solo podcast if you just
today? It's a preview. So I'm doing the preview show. So I'll have like RJ Abatey on from Stanford, but then there's like these extra questions that come in. So I usually try to answer those at the end. I didn't do that last week, but, we talk a little bit on the gambling side. I get Raphael to come in and he'll talk about the betting lines for the game. So, you know, we try to do that stuff on Wednesdays kind of as a preview thing. Then Thursday we got our Tunnel Vision show. I did an extra Tunnel Vision on Monday, which Monday I just wanted to take the day off. I didn't care. I was like, okay, I don't want to do anything today. But then Colin Cowherd.
We were going to do this Monday. We were going to do our podcast.
I was going to try to do then. Yeah.
Didn't work out. Yeah.
No, but then, and then I got a call from Colin Cowherd who was like, he wanted to do something. I'm like, well, I guess I should probably do it. So we did that, but whatever. That's all kind of behind the scenes stuff. We'll try to keep doing these more on a regular basis. I probably say this every time, but Gerard will get on me and we'll, you know, now we get into a routine of the season. We should be able to do it. Well,
the thing is that during the season, it's not always the most hot time for recruiting, interestingly, with USC. Obviously, things are sort of changing and evolving with the recruiting process because you have the early signing period. But, you know, USC didn't have any official visitors in for week one. And I don't foresee them bringing in a lot of official visitors during the season. So it's kind of a time of year where USC's focused on the team and they're focused on trying to win games. Now, they start to lose games, then they start to maybe pivot and go, okay, we got to get this recruiting class together. We got to focus more on recruiting because we're not getting it done on the field. But as long as, you know, the season is going well enough, I think their priority is always to focus on the team. So recruiting kind of takes a little bit of a back seat, I think, to the team just being coached up and then focusing on practice and not worrying about bringing recruits in during the year. I think last year they brought in like one kid during the whole, you know, the middle part of the season. That was for the Texas game. And then they brought in a couple of kids for UCLA. But it really was a pretty quiet year, and it's been like that. It's always been that. Like, we've talked about that before. Pete Carroll really kind of started that, where during the season, recruiting was just not going to be the focus. They wanted to focus on the team. They didn't want to have to bring in kids during Friday when they've got team meetings, and then they've got to entertain these kids. They really like to push it back to the end of the year. And that's not just the reason. The reason also, you're kind of putting your focus on the recruiting process towards the end of the year, so you know who you really want. I mean, at some point during the season, you start to look at this game tape and you start to evaluate the senior seasons of these players, and you know, okay, these are the kids that we really want, and you can kind of recruit from that point on instead of putting, you know, all your recruiting prowess into the summer and you're recruiting the best high school sophomores and juniors. USC wants to recruit the best high school seniors, and the only way to know who the best high school seniors are until you start to get 4, 5, 6 games into the senior season, you start to see, okay, these are the guys that are continuing to get better. These are the guys that, from a ceiling standpoint, still have potential when they get into college.
Well, you know, we want to talk about a lot of we got a lot of questions from everybody, but we want to talk about what happened over the weekend. What was the visit list like, the visitor list like, Gerard, for the UNLV game?
The unofficial visitor list was very good for USC, compiled by Chris Trevino and Shotgun Spratling for USC. They were there at the game and kind of taking note of who was in the stands. And, I mean, you had the usual suspects. You had guys like Bryce Young, who's already committed to USC, 2020 quarterback, and you expect to have a few commits there. Jordan Wilmore was there as well. Jason Rodriguez, Jake Jackson, who had a two-point conversion for a win Friday night, a big-time game for him. We got that on video. Check out uscfootball.com for his ISO video. Drake Jackson, which was a big deal. I went to go see him Friday night. It's good to get the Corona kids there to be there in person. Jake Jackson, the 6'4", 265-pound defensive end from Corona Centennial, one of the top defensive linemen on USC's recruiting board, so that was a big deal. Noah Pola-Gates, kind of a big deal to get him down there. USC has definitely picked up their recruitment of him during kind of the late spring. We talked to him, really from March to early summer. USC really wasn't recruiting him that much. And there were some opportunities there to get him on campus. His cousin, Isaiah Polamau, is there at USC, obviously. And it just wasn't a lot of contact with him and the staff. And that changed at some point during the summer. I think USC realized, A, there's not a lot of really good defensive back recruits out there that can play safety. And B, I think Isaiah Polamau, just that evaluation of him and how well he's played, I think has perked up USC's interest in his cousin. I heard some chatter that, you know, they weren't really high on Isaiah Polamau. They didn't think he was going to be that great, which was a kind of a surprising evaluation to me because he was only playing maybe a week into fall camp before he got hurt. And I've seen, you know, plenty of Isaiah Polamau in high school, so I think he's definitely a very unique athlete. I mean, he's a legitimate 6'4", 200 pounds, and he's got good speed. He's an interesting player at that sort of nickel safety position, or now really playing more of a standard safety position for USC. But obviously, his featured role now in the defense is, you know, got Noah Pola-Gates kind of interested in USC a little more too. So he went down the game, and that's a kind of a big deal for USC to make a move in his recruitment. Alabama is still the top school, but Alabama's kind of sort of slow playing him a bit. I think they've got other guys on their board that they like. Are you going to go to Arizona to recruit a kid that maybe you could get in Georgia, maybe you could get in Alabama or Louisiana? And so that's an interesting recruit for USC because he's very similar style-wise to maybe Chris Steele in that he's a bigger corner. He's a good 6 foot, 6'1", very aggressive, but he's also a guy that you could put back probably as a free safety, and he could play in space and be very comfortable playing in a safety position. So definitely a versatile threat for him. Cameron Williams, another safety that showed up, the safety from Bakersfield, who was originally committed to Oregon, decommitted from Oregon during the summer, then commit again to Washington just in late July. And so he was down from Bakersfield to watch USC play this weekend. So that's kind of a little interesting news. We reported that actually a couple weeks ago in the War Room, but he did make it. So that's another guy that was there. Mace Funa, who's committed to Oregon, the big-time linebacker from Modern Day High School. He's sitting out his senior season because he blew his ACL. But that's another guy that USC's continuing to recruit, continuing to have contact with, and a guy that, you know, we're going to watch and see how the recruiting process plays out for him. Steven Wright, another guy that's like Drake Jackson, very high on the defensive line board, about 6'3", 260. Gunn Spratling actually went and saw him a couple weeks ago play for Cathedral, so we have some ISO film of him. That's a guy that USC's really pushing hard for, and they seem to really want on the defensive line. So, you know, all in all, Justin Flo, 2020, maybe the number one player, certainly number one linebacker in the country at Upland High School, maybe the number one player overall in the 2020 class. I mean, there's a lot of talk about how good he was at various events. Certainly the USC camps, he was very good. But also at the opening, I think he was very good. He's a guy that's got a lot of buzz. He was at the game with his little brother who just got an offer at the USC camp in June, Jonathan Flo. So they both were at the game. So, yeah, it's a good list. It's a list of, you know, guys that you could see. Maybe that's how the 2019-2020 recruiting classes play out. There's plenty of guys there that USC has interest in, and even some of the commits to other schools, you can see that they're still very much in contact with USC, and they're still pretty interested in USC if they're coming down for a game against UNLV with that type of traffic and yeah. That type of heat and that type of opponent.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. We'll see, you know, for the next home game is a Friday game, so it's Washington State. Don't know what kind of, with Friday games, you know, because high school players are playing on Friday a lot. I don't know what the visit list will be like, but we'll see if it changes much. But we've been out to some games and, you know, wanted to talk about a couple of players maybe we saw in person. I can start with Jordan Wilmore from Lawndale High School. We had a question from Nick in Cyprus. He said, what's the word on Jordan Wilmore, who I'm told by the coach's corner that he's, I think he means the best tailback in the state. Where does USC stand? Well, he's a commit, and I got to see him run for, I think it was 274 yards on like 24 carries, including an 80-yard touchdown run and a 99-yard touchdown run. All that footage is up on uscfootball.com. You can check it out. If you go into his profile, you'll see it there too. He was an absolute stud in that game, and they squeaked out a win against Sierra Canyon. A lot of people, you know, people were saying different, you know, he's not a tall back at all. He's maybe 5'8" and a half, but closer to 200 pounds. So there's some power there. And if you look at him, you're going to be reminded of Curtis McNeil, I think, you know, quite a bit. If you remember him running, maybe a little bit more powerful than what Curtis McNeil would run. But yeah, seemed like a really cool kid. Got to talk to him afterwards. He had just committed like 6 days before I saw him, or 5 days before I saw him. So there really wasn't a whole lot of update as far as like what his status was or anything. He's still going to take official visits. I think Utah and Boise State are already lined up, I believe. But he, you know, he was an impressive looking kid to me, Gerard. I think our composite doesn't have him as a four-star, but 24/7 does. Because, you know, obviously we have analysts out here that could kind of see him, and having never really seen him in person, he looked like a player to me. Like, it was one of those things that some people are like, maybe he's not really going to be the guy. He looks like he could be the guy.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen him quite a few times. The biggest question mark with him is just his top end speed. He's not necessarily a big track guy, and he's not, you know, lighting it up with a 4.4 40. But he is powerfully built, and he does have great balance, and he does have good moves and good vision. And so he's kind of an interesting back. It's a little different thing. When you have a small running back, an all-purpose type back, you definitely want a guy that's got legitimate speed. You want to know, okay, this kid is legitimately clock fast. But with Wilmore, because you're seeing a guy that's probably 200, 205 pounds, he could probably play at 210, it's a sort of a different kind of deal. It's a guy that sort of has some power back to him, and you can use him in situations which you wouldn't normally use a guy that's 5'8". You know, you can use him in a situation where it's a third and two, and you can say, you know what, we know we're going to get that extra yard from him. He's another guy that, even if there's penetration in the offensive backfield, he's got the footwork, the balance. He can break a tackle, that he can make something happen out of nothing. So I see where USC likes him. I see where there are more positive attributes, knowing that he still doesn't have that top-end speed, than maybe other running backs like Sean Dollars or other smaller type, scat back, all-purpose back, just because that power aspect is still there. And he runs with it. You know, he runs with that authority too. So he's a hard guy to tackle. And so while you're not looking forward to a real speed back that's going to go for 80 yards, he's not, you know, one of these running backs that's going to be a slight running back. But hey, you know, if he can get through the line and, like a Kazmir Allen for UCLA, where, you know, you've got a guy that's a legitimate track guy, but he's really slight. I mean, you're talking about 170, 75 pound looking guy that just can't break many tackles. You know, he gets hit, he goes down immediately. So you really have to have that hole for him. You want to have that lane that opens up for him. With a guy like Jordan Wilmore, though, you don't necessarily need to have that hole. He's got pretty good lateral feet. He can bounce it outside. And like I said, he can break tackles, and he's got that leverage because he's so low to the ground. He's kind of built a little bit like a fire hydrant. He can get yards there where yards are not really evident that they're going to be there because of the blocking. So I understand, you know, sort of where USC likes him, and USC needs a couple of running backs, at least in this class. So we'll see how it goes forward with, you know, Keenan Christian is another guy that's high on the board. I think Zach Charbonnet is another guy that's high on the board. He was a little bigger running back, about 6'2", 215, committed to Michigan. We'll see what happens there. That's kind of where USC is revolved around with their running back recruiting. But with Wilmore, yeah, there's definitely a guy that has shown out. And actually, we have, I think, even more video of him coming. Keeley went to the Calabasas game where Jordan Wilmore was there. And so we have ISO video, really 2 weeks running, of Jordan Wilmore for you guys. So you really get to see what he plays like against two different teams and two different types of defenses. I went and saw, yeah, as I said, Synchronous.
Yeah.
I saw Cronus Centennial play Pittsburgh. That was Friday, and so I got to see Drake Jackson, Gary Bryant, and Corey Foreman. Gary Bryant being the 2020 wide receiver that has an offer from USC, who's had a spectacular start to the season. Centennial has started out the season with a really tough schedule. I mean, they've had Chandler, Arizona, which is one of the top Arizona teams. I think they were like ranked number two in Arizona. They had the week before, Orange Lutheran, who's stacked with, you know, Kyle Ford. You've got Ethan Reyes committed to USC, Ryan Helinski, the quarterback, Logan Loya, who's one of our favorite underclassmen receivers. And they got a bunch of guys on that team, and were able to after being down early in that game against Orange Lutheran, come back, and I think they ended up beating them like 45-28. And then they had to play Pittsburgh, which Pittsburgh had a lot of good linemen. I mean, they had a lot of good-looking offensive lineman led by Jacob Bandis, who's one of the top defensive tackles in the nation, who's committed to Washington. And so that was an interesting game. I wanted to see, you know, see if Drake Jackson won against Jacob Bandis. Very much Jacob Bandis kind of sort of plays left tackle for them, but unfortunately he only played one snap against Drake Jackson, and it wasn't really anything there. It was a pass, it was a quick pass, and so we didn't really get to see much. But Drake Jackson, just in terms of his ability, he is definitely one of those guys that sort of has the Lawrence Jackson, sort of has the Sean Cody, you know, the sort of that hybrid guy that has the pass rush moves as an edge rusher, but has the body where he could play at 280 pounds and be more of a defensive tackle. And he played three technique, and he played on the outside, and he was good playing both. He actually had four pass deflections, a couple tackles for losses. But I thought the pass deflections were really interesting, because that kind of shows you the awareness of – you know, scheme. It shows you the awareness of what's happening in the game. It shows you the awareness of the scenario, the down and distance. And he realized that that quarterback for Pittsburgh, and it was a tough game. It was, even though they won 35-7, it was not, the score was not indicative of how the game was played. And Drake was just, he kind of had a good awareness of where that quarterback was throwing, trying to get those quick passes off. And so if he wasn't getting the quarterback, because, you know, he's basically a three-step drop, sometimes a one-step drop, he started looking for that sidearm throw to the outside and getting his hands up. And that's always such a big deal. You know, it's something that I see not taught a whole lot, especially at the college level, where, I mean, that's an incomplete pass that could have gone for how many yards? You don't know. You know, one of those bubble screens or something like that, sometimes those things break for 80 yards. So you get your hands on the ball, and that could be a big play right there. And he was kind of, after the game, a little disappointed. He's like, man, did you see how many interceptions I dropped? And I was like, dude, those are tough passes. I mean, for a defensive lineman to catch, maybe one of those on the deflection, I think he could have maybe had, where he popped it up in the air and he almost made a second catch on it. But for the most part, they were pretty good plays just to get your hands up and to knock those balls down. So he looked good. Gary Bryant, like I said, started the season crazy. He got hurt in the game. He had a great 60-yard kickoff return, and then he followed that up in the next play with like a 25-yard touchdown reception. So it looked like he was going to go off in this game as well. But at some point, I think it was in that second quarter, he got tackled on a short catch and ended up kind of getting his ankle rolled up on. The defender kind of tackled him and twisted his ankle. And so he was pretty much out. He was in and out of the game from that point on, but he was limping a lot. And he's a speed guy for sure. He's a deep threat. And so that kind of took away from his game a little bit. He'll probably be out against Narbonne. I think they really don't probably need him against Narbonne. They didn't really need him against Pittsburgh at that point, but he kept coming back in. So he showed some toughness there. So it was good to see him. He's the real deal, 2020. He's a guy that people ask me, is he a legitimate, you know, deep threat? Is he one of those guys that has that type of speed? And he is definitely that guy. And he went crazy. I think he had 265 receiving yards or something like that, 3 touchdowns against Chandler. He's been crazy this offseason. So, expect big things from him going forward. Corey Foreman was a guy that hadn't seen in pads, and he got an offer from USC pretty early. I think it was last year during the May evaluations. And then he came to one of the elite camps and looked really good, and he is a beast. I mean, he's a sophomore. He's 6'5", 265. Just in pads, you know, in warm-ups, he was the best-looking guy on the field. So, I mean, you got a sophomore that's the best-looking guy on the field who's a defensive lineman. That's saying a lot. So he had, I think, 2 sacks in the game. That's a hell of a combo, a bookend defensive pair there when you've got Drake Jackson on one side and you've got Corey Foreman on the other side. And Centennial was pretty smart about keeping those guys, rotating those guys in. So Corey Foreman actually didn't start the game for them. He kind of came in a little later. So that was a hell of a thing. You know, you're Pittsburgh offensive lineman and you got this kid coming in as a second teamer and pass rushing. And so he had a good game as well. So that was that Friday. And then Thursday, I went out and saw South Hills play San Juan Hills, so I got to see our boy Sean Ryan, offensive tackle for San Juan Hills, in a game that was really tough. It was really a tough game to film, and it was a tough game for them. They lost it, and it was just the offensive line and the offense just had no they just had no real answer for South Hills. You know, they seemed really out of sync. It was really tough for them to get kind of cohesiveness. They look like they should have been able to run the ball better, but they kind of got away from the running. They had, I think, their backup quarterback in the beginning of the game, and then their starting quarterback showed up at halftime, and I don't know what the story was there, but he didn't fare much better. And so they end up losing that game. South Hills were really smart at how they attacked Sean Ryan and that they didn't attack him. They actually had multiple situations where they didn't have anybody actually even over him. They didn't even pass rush against him. They actually overloaded on the other side, and he didn't have anybody to block. So there was no real adjustment there from San Juan Hills, and that's a big issue because they got to do something to be able to make sure that Sean Ryan, one of the best offensive tackles in the country, is blocking somebody every down. You know what I mean? So it was kind of a weird thing. It was a weird shooting it. You know, there was not a lot of great clips. You know, he had a couple good run clips where he was just, you know, bowling people over, but there was other times of pass protection. Like I said, they just didn't have anybody go after him. So that was a tough game, but we've seen him actually twice already this year. We saw San Juan Hills open the season against Orange Lutheran as well, so we have some ISO clips from that game as well. So we've seen him twice already. And then the week
before... Wait, hold on, Jordan. Nick asked about him, Nick from Cypress.
Okay.
So how good is he in your evaluations? And is USC the team to beat for him? He says, hope he doesn't ruin his life. I think he meant ruin his life as he was trying
to say. Ruin his life? USC is in pretty good position for him. I mean, he's talked to Clay Helton a lot. It seems like Clay Helton is very involved in that recruitment, which is a big deal. He has a pretty good relationship with Neil Callaway as well. I feel like USC's in the driver's seat. I think, you know, for a while there, Stanford was a school that people talked about, but he hasn't really even mentioned Stanford recently and hasn't talked about officially visiting Stanford. So I think USC's in a good position with him. I actually just made a crystal ball prediction for him. That wasn't necessarily the most confident crystal ball prediction, but I feel like that's sort of where things sit right now. Again, the evaluation that I had from that game, it was tough to really gain a whole lot from that. We've seen him just in terms of athletically, he has really good quickness, good feet. He's a former rugby player. He's strong as an ox. I mean, we did some film of him at the Huntington Beach High School lineman competition. And so I don't know if you guys have checked that out, but if you go to his profile, you'll see him just killing it on power clean. I mean, he was just killing power cleans. I think he had like 25 power cleans or something, 24, something like that. Tires, you know, flipping tires and doing all that kind of stuff. Very powerful built young man. And so, you know, a guy that, you know, is he a true left tackle? Is he a franchise left tackle? I don't know. I think he could definitely be right tackle. He could probably play left tackle. Again, my evaluation, this was my first time seeing him in pads in a game. I need to see him again. It just was one of those games that South Hills just kind of, it was odd. It took him out of the game. You know, they took a left tackle out of the game. And like I said, you got to give credit to South Hills for that. They knew exactly how they wanted to attack that offensive line, and they gave him fits. You know, South Hills just had a better game plan, and they really took advantage of it winning that game. So, that's for Sean Ryan. I mean, I think he's still certainly one of the best offensive linemen in the state, and he's a must-get for USC. But, you know, is he that guy? Is he that first-round type pick? Is he that Matt Khalil-type guy, that Tyron Smith-type guy? I don't know if he has quite the athletic ability and movement and range of those guys, you know, the sort of wingspan. But then again, I'm not 100% sure that he isn't either. So I sort of reserve judgment on that. And then the week before, I saw Grace Brotherin play. So I got to see Stanley Tofu play, which was a big deal because we just haven't seen a lot of Stanley Tofu in pads. We saw him at the USC camp where it was interesting watching him play. It did look different than I guess I expected. I think I compared him to something like a cannonball out of a volcano. That's sort of how he plays even in pads. But in pads, I can kind of see the inside linebacker projection a little more than I could out of pads. I still think he ends up at USC playing off the edge. I think that's sort of what he prefers to do just because, you know, he likes to sack the quarterback. That was kind of a sloppy game for him. He missed some tackles. Certainly, I would say this with my evaluation of him. I do not see him being a replacement for a healthy Mace Funa. I don't see those guys as interchangeable. That was kind of the talk coming away when he committed and Mace Funa had already committed to Oregon. It was like, oh, well, you know, they got Stanley Tofu and he's kind of the same thing. Nah, not really. Not really. Not as long. Certainly doesn't have the same type of athletic ability. Stanley Tofu is a more physical, straightforward, brutish, attacking linebacker. He's a guy that goes north and south. He's linear. He's focused on getting upfield. That's how he plays. He's kind of got that reckless type of attitude, sort of like Solomon Tulalipupu. He's sort of that just, you know, bull in a china shop type of player. Whereas Mace Funa is that aware, you know, instinctual, plays really well in space, has great spatial awareness. I mean, like I said before, never seen a guy that's, you know, that 6'4", 260 get his hands on so many passes and fumbles and just seems to have this great instinct for the football when he's healthy. Now, that's the big thing. You know, he has the ACL that he's coming back from. Heard that was a pretty bad injury. You don't know necessarily athletically how healthy he comes back, and some guys just never really truly recover from that ACL. So, you know, but we're looking at him last year and just, you know, when we saw him, Mace Funa in person, they're not the same player. They're really not the same player. And like I said, in pads, I can kind of see the inside linebacker with Stanley Tofu a little more than I could without pads. So that was interesting. And his teammate, his cousin also, Jay Toya, interesting watching him. Now, I watched him and I kind of focused him mainly playing offense guard because I was trying to get Stanley Tofu and I couldn't film Jay Toya playing defensive tackle at the same time as filming Stanley Tofu. And Stanley was just more important, I think, you know, being a 2019 commit to get his film on defense first. But Jay Toya actually being recruited by USC to play defensive tackle, watched him play guard. He was actually pretty good. He's a pretty good guard. He's 335 pounds, about 6'2". He's got a lot of weight there. I don't necessarily know how his athleticism is going to translate to playing defensive tackle. He'd really be more of a space eater, which is not bad, you know, in USC's scheme. They don't really have too many of those guys. But I don't know that he's not a guy that ends up playing guard. But he, at that position, watching him playing guard, he was pretty good. I mean, he played hard. He, you know, kind of road graded guys that he should have road graded. He mauled them. They played against Granada Hills and they killed them 52-0, and they killed them in a week where they only had one day of practice because they had a Christian retreat that they were going to that week. The school had a Christian retreat, so they actually practiced one day before that game, and it kind of looked it. I mean, they were a bit sloppy, even though they won 52-0. There was kind of some sloppy play there, but Jay Toya, I was pretty impressed with playing guard. And then the first week I saw Noah Polagate, playing for Gilbert High School, or excuse me, not they're in Gilbert, Arizona, but it's William Field High School, and they played Norco. They ended up losing to Norco after being up, I think 21-7, 21-3 or something like that. Then Norco went crazy on them and played some of that IE second half ball where they just mashed them. But Noah Polagate was very good in that game. I mean, he played receiver, opened up first play of the game, was a 70-yard touchdown reception right at me. It's kind of like your Jordan Wilmore touchdown run where he came at you and he threw the fight on at you. I mean, right. Noah Polagate didn't throw the fight on, but he ran right at me opening. Like, you know, Blair Angulo was there with me. We're both covering the game. He goes, dude, you're done. He goes, yeah, that's 30 seconds, man. That's 30 seconds of the best kind of clip you're ever going to get. And I was like, yeah, man. So, you know, he played the receiver. He played cornerback. He played safety. He returned kicks. He kind of did it all. He ended up getting hurt and hurt his ankle again, which has been something that's been bothering him throughout, really since early last year. And so that's something to kind of watch. I don't know durability wise, you know, that's been a little bit of an issue. He's had some injuries and everything like that. But as I said before, certainly a guy that, you know, if you want comparisons, he kind of sort of a Chris Steele-ish guy. He's sort of that USC cornerback and he wants to be recruited as a cornerback. But the guy that has the body that can play free safety if you need him to, you know, he's big enough that he can do that. And he's a very aggressive player. I mean, he was playing corner and ran across the field to make a tackle, to make a almost speared some kid in the middle of the field on a play right up the middle, which was like, I mean, you know, you don't usually see a cornerback making the tackle in a dive play, and his helmet flew off, and then he had to come out for that helmet issue because the helmet broke his helmet or something. Seriously, very, very aggressive, good speed, very much like a USC, you know, Ronnie Bradford type of corner, even though USC says we don't like just size, you know, we just recruit good athletes. It seems like they always gravitate towards the guys that are 6 foot and above. Yeah. So that was that. That's the beginning of the season so far.
Man.
And that's just with me. I mean, Keeley saw the Calabasas 2 weeks in a row. Shotgun went out and saw, I think with Chris, yeah, they went and saw that San Juan Hills Orange Blue game. We've seen a bunch of games. We've a bunch of stuff. So, I mean, all that film, check out those prospect profiles because all that ISO film will be there and then all those guys' profiles.
Yeah, we put all that stuff up on the site, so go check it out. All right, we got to jump into the questions because we're like half hour in. We've had a couple.
We're just going through the list of guys we've seen and guys who are at the football game, and we're done. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, all right. This is we'll start talking about quarterbacks first. Here's a voicemail question.
JD from DC with this week's recruiting question for Gerard. GM, we're talking quarterbacks today. With Bryce Young's imminent verbal commitment, if he does choose to attend Oklahoma instead of USC, do you think USC can effectively pivot and lock down Uiagalelei at least as a nonverbal or at least a silent commit at some point prior to January so that we are not left at the altar without a decent quarterback in this class as we were a couple of seasons ago?
So obviously that's...
JD from DC.
Should we just answer it like we don't know that he committed?
Well, no. So he committed, but I wanted to play that out there because we had other questions about just kind of talk about the quarterbacks in general. Tark with a Q. How do you feel Bryce Young's commitment would it impact DJ? What is it? Ukulele? Like
Ukulele.
Okay. And who's the better quarterback between the two? Because, you know, kind of going along with JD from DC was saying, Tark with a K talks about Russell Wilson. Is he a fair comparison to Bryce Young? And then and Nick also wrote in, who is the top quarterback USC wants for the 2020 class? Is it Bryce Young? So kind of talk about all that stuff. I guess we can go.
Wow. Okay. So I think the Russell Wilson comparison with Bryce Young is pretty accurate. He has that style of play, and he kind of throws a similar ball, and smart kid, has really good mobility, and not just from the standpoint of speed, but he's really aware in the pocket. He can, get away. You saw him play against Bishop Corman the other week, and you saw him make some really big plays with his feet, and not just plays downfield, but extending the play. He's got his eyes downfield. He wants to make that pass downfield and make that the big play. And so that makes him very dangerous in that way. And I think that's certainly something that we've seen from Russell Wilson. And I think that's a pretty accurate comparison. I mean, obviously, you're comparing him to a guy that's an all-pro quarterback, and that's tough to do. But in terms of just, attributes and how everything line up, I think it's a fair comparison. In terms of him and DJ, and I said this before, DJ has the arm strength and the size that is, you can't teach that. He is a rocket arm, and I think that puts him above Bryce in that argument, who's the top quarterback in the 2020 class. But USC didn't wait. USC wasn't going to make the same mistake that they made in the past, and they made that mistake when they went after, Shea Patterson and KJ Costello, Tate Martell, and Tui Tagovailoa. To some extent, it's not, just straight comparison, but they kind of sort of got caught in between recruiting two guys in both those situations. And here they said, Bryce, we want you now. We want you now. We're going to recruit you hard. You're going to be our guy. And they went forward with that. Now, I know that there's been talk that they have told Bryce Young, you're our number one guy. You're the only guy we're going to recruit for 2020. I don't know if that's realistic, though. I think when you've got a guy like DJ Ukulele, who is that much of an outlier in terms of his arm strength, in terms of his size, and his mobility, too, because he is an athletic guy. He's not like a statue quarterback. He's got some mobility as well. I don't know that you can't recruit that guy. So I don't know that USC isn't looking for to try to get both of them. They may at the end of the day. Now the question becomes, do you lose one trying to get both? Now, that's a different thing, But I think right now they got Bryce. They went after Bryce. And I think they're very satisfied with having Bryce. And I think he works well with their offense and sort of how they've built the offense. And he's also a big part of that 2020 class in terms of recruiting, because Bryce Young is a guy that's been around a long time. He's a notable name. He's been on the passing circuit for a long time. He knows a lot of top recruits. There are going to be a lot of recruits, especially on the offensive side of the ball, but not just exclusive to the offensive side of the ball, that will want to play with him. So that is also a big deal for USC. So I think all in all, it was a big commitment. It was something that, JD, you didn't have faith in us because we gave you the crystal ball. We gave you the war rooms. He was going to go to USC over Oklahoma. And I think, USC is happy with that result, certainly.
We had another voicemail question. Here you go.
Hey, Ryan. This is Curtis from Moreno Valley. My last call, I asked about a quarterback in San Bernardino Cajon High School that we had offered, but never mind him. The quarterback that we just got a commitment from 2020, number one dual threat in the nation at what I know he's small, but he's a five-star already, and he's going to the 11th grade. You guys know how this star system works. I remember you did a show called Stars Do Matter. Explain to the people how rare this is to be such a small person and achieve a five-star so early in your high school career. We better make sure we get this guy. Curtis from Moreno Valley.
Curtis has got so much swag. Well, with quarterback position, it's an evaluated position much earlier in the process than a lot of other positions. I would say, you know, it's probably the first position you see, because you got parents that push their kids out there and they want to get their kids as much exposure early on. And it's a position that, for whatever reason, I mean, obviously there's a lot of focus on it. It's a pivotal position in football. And you know, that's why the quarterbacks are always going high in the draft. It sort of just, it trickles down all the way to like middle school. So we've known about Bryce Young. I've known about Bryce Young since he was a seventh grader, I believe. And he was originally going to Narbonne High School. And there was all this buzz about it. And the first time I saw him play in person, he was playing for Ground Zero, I believe. And he was playing for one of the Ground Zero B teams. And it was the Long Beach Poly kids that were there. It was a few kids from Long Beach Poly. It might have been one of the Markham twins that was talking to me and going, oh, yeah, that's that kid. That's the Bryce Young kid. Oh, man. Yeah, I think he's going to run an Auburn, but we're trying to get him to go to Poly. And so I was like, oh, okay. He was like, I think he's in eighth grade. And so I went over to watch him play, and he was really good. I was like, wow, he throws a nice ball, man. And so I went over to Armon Hawkins, who runs Ground Zero, who's the father of Chris Hawkins. So we've known Armand for years and years. And Armand was making some kind of comment. I think Stephen Carr was still, you know, like a junior or whatever. And Armand was talking about his teams. I go, you know, the best quarterback you have right now might be that kid on your sniper team, which is like their C team or what have you. And he looks at me and goes, really? He goes, yeah. Ooh, okay. And I don't think he even really watched how much Bryce Young was playing at that point or how he played in that particular tournament. That was a passing down tournament, I believe. And Bryce Young just ascended, you know, and then he went to the Cathedral and he went to a bunch of different high schools. He's just had that exposure for that long. A class away is still ranked a 5-star. And it certainly is projection because it is farther out and there's a lot more football that he has to play. But, you know, remember that JT Daniels was a 5-star when he was a junior, and then boom, now he's, you know, turned around and playing and starting for USC in college, you know, the next year and skipping his senior year. So it's definitely something that it's not rare. But for Bryce, in terms of, now you want to talk about his profile and how big he is as a quarterback and how it can be a 5-star under those circumstances. Well, just look at that game, modern day playing Bishop Gorman. You know, they dominated and Bryce was a big part of that. I mean, you lose a guy like JT Daniels, who is a franchise, you know, maybe a generational talent at quarterback at that high school level. And then you're able to plug in a guy like Bryce Young and he's able to play and it's like they didn't even miss a beat. I mean, they beat Bishop Gorman by more this year than they did last year. Granted, Bishop Gorman is not quite as good. But we'll see, you know, with the rest of the season they're going to play. I think St. Mary's Stockton this weekend. And, you know, they've got the normal, really difficult schedule that they have to play, which is nice to see modern day do that. I mean, they go up and they play everybody. They got IMG this year. They're not like the SEC where, you know, you got, you know, some schools like Alabama that they're out of conference games are these little cupcakes and stuff like that. The Trinity League still goes after even in the non-league games. Even though they're going to play a tough league schedule, they still go and schedule hard in the non-league as well.
Let's talk about some offensive and
little shot there at the SEC.
Nice. Let's take a little shot.
Shot.
Offensive and defensive line recruiting. We'll start with the offensive line. We had a text, like general one, how's USC doing recruiting offensive defensive lines? Tarek wrote in, how many offensive tackles do you expect USC to get in this class? We had a longer email from Paul. I'm very concerned that USC is being significantly out-recruited for offensive linemen, the number one area of need for 2019. And he goes on to list a bunch of guys. They've committed to other Pac-12 programs. This is a year that most recruiting experts believe is one of the strongest classes in memory for offensive line talent in the West region. USC's only signed one offensive lineman in 2019. What the heck's going on? Many observers believe it's due to Coach Callaway's age and inability / unwillingness to recruit. In fact, Jonah, so he's talking, okay, so from Jonah from Narbonne was quoted as saying that Oregon recruited him harder than anyone else, including USC. How does this happen when the kid is in your backyard? So that's from Paul. So a bunch of offensive line recruiting things.
Wow. Okay. this is more than even the Jordan Woomer question.
Well, just talking offensive line, you know, it's like.
Just talk about the offensive line, Gerard. Rapid fire. Well, first and foremost, I don't think they're getting significantly out recruited at this point. They are getting out recruited a bit. It would be, inaccurate to say that they are not getting out recruited when Jonah Ta'anau basically said, yeah, Oregon recruited me harder than USC. The criticisms of Callaway are known, and they've been there for a while. They had a very good recruiting class in 2016 on the offensive line, however. So again, it's one of those things. I don't know if it's just a matter of not how well they're recruiting, but when they're recruiting, because we know with defensive backs and there's other positions that some of the coaches on this coaching staff just don't recruit the whole year. It's just not the way it goes. They recruit maybe three months out of the year. And that's when they focus on it, and that's why USC closes strong and they're able to get guys that they get. But when you're talking about April and you're talking about June and you're talking about even October, you're not necessarily going to see this big push to get recruits. And so this is one of those classes where we see, you know, how things play out. And certainly we see how things play out on the field as well, because there's some heat on Neil Callaway in terms of how the offensive line played last year and how they played the start of this year and even in fall camp how they played. So we'll see how that plays out when you've got Tim Drevno there, you know, maybe kind of looking over his shoulder. And we know Tim Drevno has had some success as an offensive line coach and was a decent recruiter at USC, certainly a good, I think, talent evaluator. But in terms of the guys that are there and the available players, I mean, there's still plenty of available players. I mean, they've got Jason Rodriguez, which is one of the top guys in the class that they wanted. They got him secured, and he's a solid verbal. They do have Gino Quinones, who's a defensive end, a three-star from St. Louis Honolulu High School, but he is being looked at and projected as a guard for USC, so that's actually two offensive linemen that USC has recruited, which a lot of people forget about Gino Quinones, but yeah, he is projected to play offensive guard at USC, even though he's rated as a defensive end for St. Louis High School. Jonah Ta'anau, they're going to continue to recruit. And I think that they'll have a chance at him. Inoke Vamahi is another guy that they're recruiting pretty hard. He just came back from an official visit to Notre Dame. So Notre Dame's in there. Kind of Notre Dame's like the one school that's kind of out of the way that he's looking at. He's originally from California, grew up in Sacramento. And so, that's a guy that, you know, Washington, and it's a Pac-12 sort of guy you would think with Notre Dame in there as well. But USC should be able to get an official visit with Inoke Vamahi. Sean Ryan, we already talked about. You know, I think USC has a pretty good shot at him. There's still a handful of guys out there. I mean, I think the top list of guys that USC wants to be in on, I think they still have a shot at. So it's just early in the year. It's not one of those things that I think you gotta, you know, the sky is falling. But at the same time, you know, the criticism that is there of how they've recruited and how they've approached recruiting a little bit still exists, and it'll exist until, you know, they're able to get this class done, because it's a very vital class. It's a class where they need five or six guys that are all top guys because of the lack of depth in the guys that they have leaving now. And so that is what it is. And I think it's in terms of how many guys are recruiting that are actual offensive tackles, I think you're probably looking at three guys that can play offensive tackle. I don't know that they're going to play offensive tackle, but I think you want three guys that have the potential to be able to go in there and play offensive tackle, whether it be right tackle or play left tackle. The question always when you're recruiting offensive line is, can you find the franchise left tackle? Can you find that first round pick? And that guy's hard to find. That's why left tackle is a high paid position, because there's not a lot of those guys that have the athleticism, the footwork, the balance, and they have the wingspan, those long arms, that you can play that position. You can be put out there against a nine technique and play in that space and not get beat with a spin move or get beat with a speed move. That's hard to find. And those guys just don't fall off of trees. And that's the question really right now about Austin Jackson. Is he going to be an actual franchise left tackle, or is he just a guy that's there and he's playing left tackle and he's a good solid role player as a left tackle, and you know, he gets the job done. You know, there's a difference between, and I would say Tyron Smith, but we know that Tyron Smith didn't even play left tackle at USC. He actually played right tackle most of his career at USC. Now he's an all pro left tackle for the Dallas Cowboys. Of course, he's also not 265 pounds like he was at USC. He's now 300 pounds. nutrition, weight training. So yeah, that's a big deal. But it was Matt Khalil who really played left tackle the whole time. But you know, you don't find a lot of those guys that you get, you know, 3-year starter left tackle, and you just, oh yeah, we got Matt Khalil there. No worries. Okay, we'll just, okay, let's find a center. You know, you're looking for the rest of the offensive line, which is much easier to find. You're just plugging guys in at guard and everything because you know 3 years are taken care of because we got Matt Khalil out there at left tackle. Not a lot of those guys. So we'll see if Austin Jackson is one of those guys, or Austin Jackson is just, you know, another left tackle that is good enough and does the job, and you don't have to worry too much about getting JT Daniels' back broken from a weak side defensive end.
Okay, so on the defensive line side, a little bit, you know, we had the text about that too. We also had Mike in the Bay Area. Hello, Ryan. Mike in the Bay Area. How is the defensive line recruiting looking? Are we still on the outside looking in for the 5-star from Hawaii, because we only took 2 last year and we're looking to sign a lot this year? Thanks for all the content and hard work you put into the website. As always, fight on. Mike in the Bay Area. And then Lloyd, he's concerned about the recruiting, the number of 3-stars being recruited, and also wants to know how they're recruiting on the offensive defensive lines.
Yeah, so Fa'atu'i To'atele, who is the 5-star from St. Louis High School in Honolulu. He is the teammate of Gino Quinones. I would say yes, USC still very much on the outside looking in. I don't know how hard USC is going to push for that. I know that they're still in contact with him. I just don't know if they feel like he's a must-get. It's an interesting thing because you have guys like Drake Jackson is a must-get. Drake Jackson is better and quite frankly, he's underrated than a lot of people realize. He could be a guy. He really could be a guy. I don't know if he's going to be Leonard Williams, but he could definitely, like I said, he could be sort of a Lawrence Jackson type of guy. You know, that you know, I always felt like Lawrence Jackson, and you talk to Lawrence Jackson now and again and bump into him. I haven't seen him in a long time. I haven't seen him. I think I've met him at Englewood High School years ago. I haven't seen him since. I always felt like he needed to put more weight on and be more of a defensive end or defensive tackle, more of a 3 technique. I always thought, dude, you need to be 280, 285. You need to be playing 3 technique. You're not fast enough to just kind of hang out as a 5 technique and be a strong side defensive end. I mean, you're good at, don't get me wrong. He was a really good high college player and he was, you know, pretty decent. He had had his time in the NFL, but I felt like in terms of the ceiling, like he would have played in the NFL and maybe been even better and been a guy that could have possibly been an all pro if he would have been a 3 technique. And I felt like Kyle Moore was another guy like that. Kyle Moore always hovered around that 260 and then he wanted to drop weight because he was going to quote unquote get faster. And I'm like, Kyle, are you getting that much faster? Are you really getting that much faster that you're losing 10, 20, 15 pounds and you're losing that ability to maybe set an edge, or you're losing that ability to just, you know, power through a punch or something from the offensive line from a run block standpoint. You know, sometimes those guys, they just, you know, 6'6", 6'5", and they hover on that sort of strong side defensive end, defensive tackle. And sometimes I think guys just need to put on the weight, be a defensive tackle, and then your natural pass rush skills will make you that much better of a player. You know, it's sort of like the guy that plays corner that's tall and big, and he can get away with playing corner, but you know what, man, if you just put on a little more weight, you could be a really good safety, like, because you've got those coverage skills. At corner, they're okay, but at safety, those are great coverage skills. Or the receiver that's, you know, 6 foot, and he's 175 pounds, and he's got good speed, and he's got okay hands, but you're kind of going, all right, dude, you're not special at that position, but if you play cornerback, maybe you would be special. And that's sort of what I see with Drake Jackson. I see a guy that he's a good defensive end, but maybe if he put on a little more weight, he could be a really special defensive tackle as a 3 technique. So he's there. He's a must-get. USC's doing really well for him. Well, I've talked it. You know, he's going to Oregon, and Oregon's the leader. I talked to him. I didn't get that vibe at all. I didn't get the whole he's going to Oregon vibe, but you never know. Oregon wants to win the recruiting national championship, you know, before it's even played. So they've, you know, got a class going and everything, but we saw how that went last year. So we'll see how it goes this year. But I got the feeling that he's still very much interested in USC. The guy that's really the pull that USC's, you know, working to get into is Siaki Ika. And that's a 6'3", 330-pound defensive tackle slash nose tackle from Utah. He is sort of a guy that, you know, it's rare to find those guys that are that, you know, 330. Actually, I say 330. He's probably more like 360. He dropped to 340 for the opening. But he was like 360, I think, when he was at the regional opening. The finals, he was at 340, he told me. But that's a kid that I think USC has some traction on behind the scenes. A lot of people don't realize they're in a better position with him than I think, you know, he publicly stated. But a guy that's, you know, kind of vital to that type of defense that they run. And I think that's going to be the interesting one because they're really battling Alabama for him. You know, he likes Alabama and Tosh Lapoy's kind of gotten his claws in there. And that's going to be an interesting to see how USC is able to work him. Talked about Stephen Wright. That's another guy that, you know, USC likes. He's, you know, 6'3", 260. Another guy's going to have to put on weight. He's going to end up being probably 290. But with him, I think it's more certain. I think he's more certain of an interior guy. I think that's, you know, with Drake, there's probably a little more chance he could play on the outside. But I think with Stephen Wright, he's definitely an interior guy. So that's kind of where it revolves right now. That's kind of sort of where it is. There's some, you know, there's some guys like Nathan Pickering that's from Mississippi that will probably end up officially visiting USC. Sama Pama is another potential guy that could visit USC. He's committed to Washington from Honolulu, Hawaii, the big 6'5", 325-pound defensive tackle, and he wants to play defensive tackle, but he was originally listed as an offensive guard. We'll see kind of how USC recruits him. So, you know, there's less, I think, options on the defensive line than there are on the offensive line for this class in terms of the talent pool. But they're also probably they don't need as many guys at the interior defensive line than they need on the offensive line. So it's sort of, you know, kind of in the same – they're in the same place, I think, both offensive and defensive line in terms of recruitment. You know, they still have good options there that they can get. Even if they're guys that are already committed to other schools, there's still good options there that I think they have a chance at. It's just a matter of what happens with the season and what happens when they really do put the full court press on those players.
All right, let's go to Ted in Manhattan Beach. He said, with the departure of Akili Ross and the unknown status of Bubba Bolden, how might this affect the recruiting of Noah Pola-Gates and other safety targets?
It does affect him a lot. I mean, because specifically with Noah Pola-Gates, his cousin is the one now starting. And so, you know, the vibe there, obviously, from Isaiah would have been different if he was maybe playing behind Bubba Bolden, who's also, you know, Bubba is a sophomore because he burned his red shirt, whereas Isaiah has that red shirt. But they're still the same class. They both came in the same class. So now, you know, Isaiah is fully in the mix. We expect Isaiah to play well. I mean, he had some issues first game and bit on the end of round, and there's some other things that he did. But he's, like I said, he's a very unique talent, and he's got unique abilities. And I think at that position at USC, if he's able, really, I feel like that nickel safety is probably a little more of the position he probably should be playing, so he could get him up near the line of scrimmage more often. He could be very, very effective, and that will help USC with Noah Pola-Gates, because Noah will obviously have more interest in watching USC. You know, he wants to see his cousin. He wants to go to games. He wants to see what's going on, and he's starting now. That's a big deal for the family. They're all related to Kennedy Polamalu and Troy Polamalu as well. So there's a lineage there with Noah Pola-Gates. And if Alabama is going to sort of slow play him a bit and USC is able to win some games and they're able to have a good season, I always say, I mean, this season I think is 10 wins is a good season for them. I think that's solid for USC with the new starting quarterback and everything going on. I think that, you know, that's definitely going to play as an advantage. That's a real tangible advantage for USC that not only do you have, you know, Bubba Bolden out, and kind of, you know, indefinitely, we don't know what's going to happen with him. But you have his cousin actually starting and in the mix and, you know, bring him in and he can host him on an official visit. Yeah. It's definitely more engaging and it's going to be more interest from Noah, I think, at this point going on.
Then he also had a question about, any thoughts on, Quaveris Crouch? How serious is he about USC? Thanks for all you do for the members, Ted, Manhattan Beach.
Yeah, how serious is he? Yeah, he mentioned that he was trying to set up an official visit to USC, and you know we'll see what happens with that. He's a North Carolina kid, and the Carolinas have not been very good to USC over the years. You know, Quaverius Crouch is 6'2", 225. He's really an athlete. We have him listed as an athlete, running back, linebacker, number two rated athlete behind Brew McCoy in the nation. But there just have not been a lot of guys from the Carolinas that have given USC a real serious look. And with him, you know, you're talking about Tennessee, you're talking about South Carolina. South Carolina had a really good start to the season. They look like they could be a team in the SEC East this year. I wouldn't put a whole lot into that one. To our knowledge, he doesn't have any real connections to California or Southern California, USC. So there's not really a lot of angle there. It's just kind of, hey, you know what? We like you. We want you to play running back. That's a big deal. You know, recruiting kids at the positions that they want to play is always a big deal. And that's why I said with Noah Pollock-Gates, USC's kind of sort of still recruiting him just as a defensive back. But he wants to hear that he's going to be brought in as a cornerback that plays with kids. And so with Crouch, you know, some other schools there in the SEC may be going, well, you know, he might like you more as a linebacker. He wants to play running back. And so I think that's probably one of the things that's kind of standing out with USC. And the fact that USC's got great tradition at the running back position, and they need some guys. You know, you're going to have one more year with Stephen Carr. And, you know, Akrasinic Ware is going to be gone after this year. And so you're going to be down a bit in terms of depth chart. I mean, they're not great right now with depth chart. Even if they had a you know, an injury or two, they'd be pretty bad shape this year. So, I mean, next year, yeah, they definitely need to get at least two guys and probably a full class of what it's looking like for 2019. You want to be able to get a guy that can definitely complement Jordan Wilmore. And I think that's, like I said, where Zach Charbonnet kind of comes in, 6'2", 215. And maybe a little faster even than Crouch. I've never seen Crouch in person. I mean, he's, you know, like I said, he's short Charlotte, North Carolina kid, kind of out of sight, out of mind from that standpoint. But I think Charbonnet is sort of probably going to be the guy that you circle. Is it's probably easier to flip him from Michigan than to get a guy from North Carolina. Let's just say that.
All right, we got a let's go to Tarek with a K. If you could only take one, would you take Brew McCoy or Kyle Ford?
That's a tough question.
Very tough.
I say Brew McCoy because I think Brew McCoy, the versatility, the potential that he can play outside linebacker. I like his game. I think that he's actually a little faster than Kyle Ford. He's got, I think, a little quicker. I think he's a little more sudden, believe it or not, even though he's actually a little bit bigger than Kyle Ford. I think Kyle's like around that 6'2", 205 range, where Brew's about, you know, 6'3", 215. So I probably would take Brew McCoy, although it's very close. Kyle Ford is a very good player as well. And, you know, the comparisons with Juju Smith, I think they're pretty accurate.
Yeah, he's versatile. I don't know, but what I saw from Kyle Ford – and in Dallas was pretty damn
impressive. Didn't get to see Brew McCoy there. That's the problem.
But I've seen him other places. I've seen him other places, but just he was special that day or that weekend. He was. Tarek, what is your evaluation of Isaiah Rutherford as a cornerback? At 6'2", he possesses the size. SC likes a corner and runs sub 11 second 100 meters.
Oh. So Isaiah Rutherford to me is sort of Tyler Vaughn's to Ryan. So I'm a big Isaiah Rutherford fan. I saw Isaiah, probably not that much, but no one could ever have a man crush as big as Ryan's on Tyler Vaughn's. I saw him at the Adidas National Championship and ISO'd on him. And he's not 6'2". He's probably more like 6'1", 6'1", maybe. But he is really, really good. I mean, he's really good hips, great on transition, legitimately fast, like a legitimately fast guy, probably at the end of the day, probably like a 10-7 guy. And I like that. I know that about him. You know, I think with a lot of these cornerback recruits and USC gets involved with guys, you know, you just, okay, what's his track time? He doesn't run track. Okay. Cornerback, don't run track. What was his 40 time? He's a 4.8. Okay. That's not great. And then you wonder why they get beat and you got to play cover two all the time and have a safety over the top. So it's nice to have a big guy as a corner. And with USC scheme, as I've already said, I think you need bigger corners and bigger defensive backs because you're playing a 2-5-4. you're playing a 2-4-5. You're playing two down defensive linemen. You're playing four linebackers, and you're playing five defensive backs. And we've seen USC, and even in that last game, there were situations where you had like a 3rd-and-3, 3rd-and-2, and they're playing that as a base defense. That is their base defense. That's a sub-defense for most other schools. For whatever reason, this is the base defense now for Clancy Pendergast. And so, you know, you got to have some bigger defensive backs because those guys are playing near the line of scrimmage. They have to. You're blitzing linebackers and defensive backs instead of having one or two more defensive linemen there. We're talking about 250, 260-pound guys that would normally be on that line of scrimmage playing against the run. Those guys are absent in that base defense. You're putting a linebacker that's 200, probably 40, 50 pounds, and maybe if it's a Jordan Iosefa, or Uchenna, you know, those guys are about 245, 250. I don't know if George's quite that big, but he's around probably 240. And then you're plugging in, you know, a defensive back instead of, and that's, that guy's got to be bigger. You got to, because there's a chance are you're going to have to tackle in spaces at the defensive back. So I think that's why you see USC getting bigger at defensive back, but then you get bigger, sometimes you get slower as well. And if you're playing slower on the edge, then those deep passes, you it's hard to play man coverage. So that's where I like to see a guy that's got legitimate speed. Like, show me the clock speed. And I realize there's a difference between football speed and there's a difference between track speed. But when you are playing in a way that you have to have speed, then you have to have proven speed. You can't just hope, well, on film, he's pretty good and he doesn't get run by these high school guys. It's high school, man. You're not going to see a bunch of Division I receivers playing in high school. That's just the way it goes. And so, yeah, I really like Isaiah Rutherford. USC is not recruiting him very hard. He did not put USC, I believe, in his top seven. And that's all because they just didn't recruit him. And, again, it goes back to the point I made about just some of the coaches on the coaching staff clearly do not recruit the whole year. It's, you know, they just kind of recruit a little bit early in the spring, give some offers, make some phone calls, and then they forget about it. It's like, yeah, whatever. Let's focus on spring ball. Let's focus on this. And it's not that constant recruiting throughout the year over the summer. And then at some point in November, late November, then they kind of turn it back on again and go, oh, we got to recruit. You know, it's coming up. Going to have some kids. It's going to be early signings. Going to have some early grads. We got to start recruiting guys and just got to start, you know, getting ready for in-home visits. And that's how they have done it. Now, they got away with it the past 2 years. My question is always, if you don't have a good season, if you do bumble and stumble into 8 wins, forget about maybe 7 wins, then how does that work? Because you all of a sudden pop up out of nowhere. You've got absolutely no momentum behind you in terms of how you play during the season to get kids excited about USC. You're basically recruiting flat-footed. That's going to be different. That's a different scenario. That's a different environment to recruit in, and that might be much harder to be able to close strong with. And so that's the thing. That's the sort of the caveat. But USC, the last few 2 years, they finished pretty strong. Especially towards the end of the season, won a Pac-12 championship last year. The year before, they go to the Rose Bowl. You know, there's momentum there. That there's kids getting excited. I mean, you're looking at what's happening at UCLA. You look at what's happening at Oregon, and even Washington to some extent. You see, like, USC's got the momentum there. They're the team to beat. They're the team with all the momentum in the Pac-12. People keep saying, "Hey, is USC back? Is USC back?" Those kids want to be a part of that. They want to be part of USC being back because they know what that means. That means, you know, potentially playing for 3 straight national titles. But, you know, if you don't have that and the bottom falls out at the end of the year, oh, that's a whole different scenario. That's a different story. So, you know, will they get back involved with Isaiah Rutherford? Where will Gavin Morris all of a sudden become the Cape Crusader and fly in and become, you know, the guy all of a sudden, you know, they start recruiting Isaiah Rutherford and it's like, oh, yeah, you know, talking to Gavin Morris and boom, next thing you know, USC's in it. That seems to be what's happened the past 2 years. We'll see if something like that happens this year.
Keep it on that defensive back theme, Tark with a Q. What's the reason behind the recent downward trend of Trent McDuffie to USC? If we aren't interested, then what other corners or DBs are we recruiting seriously?
You know, that is interesting because I say that about how USC doesn't really recruit during the offseason. And it's not true of every player now. I don't want to paint with a broad brush. Chris Steele was a guy that they knew was going to commit early, and they wanted him. then. They didn't want to get him down the road and try to flip his commitment. For whatever reason, they were, we're all in on Chris Steele. This is our guy. We're going to get him early. And they made that move to make sure they got Chris Steele. Interestingly enough, Trent McDuffie's another guy that they've been pretty involved with. They've recruited him pretty good. I wouldn't say that he's a guy that, yeah, you know, like Isaiah Rutherford, they just haven't talked to him very much. They've been recruiting him. He just, I don't know. I don't know if it's the Chris Steele thing, because they are teammates at St. John Bosco now. Maybe he sees the depth chart at USC and is just not into it. But, yeah, he's not really feeling USC that much. And it seems like they're probably third or fourth on his list right now. Stanford is a big player for him. Washington is a big player for him. Julius Irvin, who was a main recruit for USC last year, went to Washington. Washington's done well recruiting against USC at the defensive back position. And they've had some guys, and they've developed some guys there. Ironically, those guys were mostly recruited by Steve Sarkisian that they've done well with. But they've developed those guys, and they've come out, and they've been good players. And so Jimmy Lake has sort of been USC's kryptonite to some extent. Jimmy Lake versus Ronnie Bradford, and Jimmy Lake has won a few of those battles. Now, USC last year got guys that they wanted to get, though. You can't say USC really missed out on a whole lot other than maybe Julius Irvin, but they ended up getting Elijah Griffin and Isaac Taylor Stewart and Talanoa Hufanga and Chase Williams. That's a pretty damn good foursome. Washington would love to have those four guys, and they didn't get them. USC got them. So, again, you have to look at this in reality and context and not go too overboard in your criticism of how they're recruiting. But with Trent McDuffie, for whatever reason, he's just not vibing with USC. And it's not the, you know, Jonah Tanau or Isaiah Rutherford, some of these other kids are just like, yeah, I haven't really heard from USC that much. Noah Pola Gates was one of those kids, you know, back in April, May. He's like, I just don't really hear from USC. You know, I just don't really talk to him very much. But that's changed. And that's the one thing about USC, and everybody in the Pac-12 knows it, and all the coaching staffs in the Pac-12 fear it. USC has the ability to hit that switch, and they can do it. And other schools can't do it. And Chip Kelly is hoping that he can do it at UCLA. And Chip Kelly, I don't know. He also went for it on fourth down probably when he shouldn't have. Might want to reevaluate that. But UCLA, maybe not as much, but USC can flip the switch. They've shown they've done it the last 2 years. They've done it several times. They've done even do it with Steve Sarkisian when they didn't have a great year. They flipped the switch there in December, and boom, they're in it with some kids, and they end up getting a good recruiting class. So we'll see if some changes. But with Trent McDuffie, I don't think that's so much that. I think he's just not as interested in USC as we thought he would be.
All right, let's see. We'll go with David. He said, first, Tracy Pearson on the UCLA board. So he's talking about Bro, the UCLA site on 24/7 Sports, we're the USC site, posted that the Bruins, quote, essentially turned down Ethan Ray. Is that true? What is the story?
Essentially, whenever you put a modifier on something like that, you have to question it. UCLA did take Mike Martinez's commitment, and Mike Martinez had committed, I believe, the day that Ethan Ray was going down to unofficially visit USC or UCLA. So in that, looking at it from that perspective, you could take that, oh, well, they took him instead of Ethan Ray, which they did. But if they would have had the ability to maybe recruit Ethan Ray and they felt better about me, see, the whole thing is, how did UCLA feel about Ethan Ray at that point? You know, they feel like Ethan Ray was going somewhere else. They feel like he was slipping. There's always a question about that. I would take Ethan Ray as a tight end all day over Mike Martinez. No question about it. The question is, for UCLA, are they even really recruiting a tight end? That's really the question, because taking one over the other, you might be looking at an offensive tackle versus a tight end, or maybe even defensive end, because Ethan Ray perhaps could play defensive end. A lot of people have talked about that. He's a pretty good defensive end as well. But he's not an offensive tackle, which that's what Mike Martinez is projected to play. And he's projected to play that even at UCLA. Now, they've taken him as a tight end, but everybody looks at him and says, that's a guy that's got a future as a left tackle. Maybe he's that guy that ends up being a franchise left tackle, you know, potentially. He's got to gain some weight. He's only about 250, 255 pounds right now. But you're talking about a gargantuan 6'6". Not a Michael Jordan 6'6", okay? This is a big guy at 6'6". Really huge hands, really huge feet. and could very easily probably put on that weight to be 280, 285, to be more of a franchise left tackle. You know, he's going to be a 300 pounder, maybe not in college, but eventually, man, I probably will get up to that 295 range. And that's what you're looking at. So essentially, you know, if you're looking at, okay, who you take as a tight end, I think you take Ethan Ray all day long. But is UCLA really even going to play tight ends? Right now they have a tight end. But, you know, that system that they play up in Oregon, they didn't really use the tight end very much. So that's really more of, I think, what's going on there. I don't think that's a, well, they didn't like Ethan Ray, or they don't think Ethan Ray is good enough for them, or they think Mike Martinez is a better tight end than Ethan Ray. I don't think it speaks to any of those things.
And then he also wants to know, can you try to explain why year in and year out we get, so we talk about USC, the vast majority of the five-star and other highly ranked local kids and UCLA doesn't? Is it still Reggie Bush? Is it our championship pedigree? The Bruins get one every once in a while, but we seem to almost always get the guys like Juju Adoree, Sua Cravens, Robert Woods, Marquise Lee, Iman Marshall, JT Daniels, and Amon-Ra St. Brown, the ones we really want. David.
It's the tradition. It's that USC is a football school and UCLA is a basketball school. I think most kids that grow up in Southern California see it that way. They don't look at UCLA as a football school. It's John Wooden and the basketball team. I would say like this, how many guys in basketball does USC get over UCLA? Now, recently, they've done a good job recruiting, and they have a really good class this most recent class. But, I mean, you're looking at it long term, UCLA is always, even when USC's had better seasons and everything, UCLA tends to get the better basketball recruits. It's just the lineage there. It's the tradition that's been the basketball school. The investment is there in basketball. It's not necessarily there in football. Whereas USC, it's always been about football. Now, we've seen in recent years that question more. You know, is USC really investing in football? It's not really versus UCLA, although obviously UCLA is investing more. I mean, they pay a bunch of money for Chip Kelly. They pay a bunch of money for new football facilities. So they are kind of reinvesting into football, and they are putting more investment in there. And in comparison with USC recently, you could say they're maybe putting up as much, if not more. Just from a coach standpoint, obviously, you know, with Chip Kelly getting paid a lot more than when Clay Helton is. And USC's kind of gotten away with that for the past, I mean, a few years. You're going back to Lane Kiffin. Lane Kiffin wasn't a really high-paid head coach. He didn't warrant it because he didn't have the experience. Sarkisian wasn't a guy that they had to, you know, pay a bunch of crazy amount of money for either. So they kind of had a budget on coaching staffs the past few years. And in terms of football facilities, they had the McKay Center. The McKay Center, like I said before, was a long time coming. That should have been built. If USC was a Big 12 school, let alone Big 10, or SEC. They were an ACC school, for crying out loud. They would have had that thing built mid probably 2008, 2009, with Pete Carroll, okay? It wouldn't have been as Pete Carroll was leaving, as they were done with Pete Carroll. That's sort of been USC the past few years. And, you know, the sort of mediocre, kind of underwhelming renovation of the Coliseum. It's, you know, it's a lot of money, but in the grand scheme of things, the Coliseum has been there for how long? You know, when's the last time you renovated it? That's kind of your home stadium. It's been your home stadium. There's a lot of questions recently about USC and how much they really care about athletics. Let's just be frank. And that goes to the athletic directors. That goes to the choices that they've had with coaching staff. That goes with the support staff money that they put into that. There's a lot of stuff that goes on with that. And so the margin there is, I think, definitely decreasing between UCLA and USC in terms of that investment in football. But you still, when you look at USC, I mean, how many national championships, how many Heisman trophies, and then you look across town and they just don't have that. So that's a big factor in that. You know, you grow up in Southern California, still to this day, I think most kids see USC as a football school and UCLA as a basketball school.
We had Matt wrote in about, so when Jordan Wilmore committed a couple weekends ago, the announcement said four stars. So he's a three star, like I mentioned earlier, on the composite, but 24/7 Sports has him as a four star. And I think we were.
Which is really what you guys should look at.
Yeah.
I mean,
he's confused there about that. So he wants to know, he said that's silly. Why are there two different things?
Well, the composite rankings are taking all of the rankings that are out there by major media outlets and compiling them and averaging them. So it's instead of having to go to see what ESPN has a kid ranked, it's being interjected into that. So it's supposed to be the most objective look, right? Because you're taking the opinions of not only the 24/7 Sports Network, which when it was created, which was much smaller than it is now, but you're also taking into account writers from ESPN, writers, people that are seeing all kinds of different stuff. Now, our biggest problem with that is ESPN is so damn biased and so ignorant with recruiting rankings. It's gotten to be crazy how they have no idea what's going on west of the Mississippi, I think. I don't even know if Texas they really have accurate rankings. And it seems to be sort of slated towards a business model more than it is objectivity. It's not, we're just, you know, we just haven't seen enough of guys on the West Coast, which is obvious. But it goes further to the point of where if you're playing in the Under Armour game and you're playing in a game that's on ESPN, we're automatically going to have you ranked higher. And it's just an obvious thing. It's not really hard to see the how things are working out with their rankings and who they have ranked high and who's playing in the game. It's been like that for a long time, but it's just gotten worse and worse over years. So it skews those composite rankings to such a point that it's really bad. It used to be you had Scout, you had 24/7, you had ESPN, and you had Rivals. Okay, so you had Scout there, which did a really good job on the West Coast. Okay, you can make your criticisms of maybe in the Big 12 or maybe in other places, but we got Brandon Huffman, you've got Greg Biggins, you've got really most of the Pac-12 with full-time publishers and people that actually go to see games and know recruiting and see the kids and cover their teams, you've got pretty good idea of who's the better players in the West. And that sort of evened it out. I think that balanced out what ESPN was doing, because ESPN is so focused on the Southern region, on Georgia, Florida, and Alabama, and South Carolina and North Carolina. That is all for them. That is it. That is where their focus is. And so you had a balance, but now Scout is a part of 24/7. It's just 24/7 is now just getting that one vote. Basically, it's like, we're voting on each player and Scout lost the vote. It's just been combined now with 24/7, which makes the 24/7 rankings, their rankings, that much more accurate, because you have all those guys that are standing on the table for West Coast kids, and you have people out here with eyes out here that are doing evaluations. So 24/7 now, I mean, it's like combining, Scout and 24/7 all together. Nothing better than that, really. There's no, there's just nothing that competes with that. We have way more people out there seeing games. We have way more people at events than anybody. Like, it's probably 3-1, quite frankly. There's probably 3 or 4 of us from 24/7 Sports at an event. And that goes coast to coast compared to any other network, any other recruiting site. So that's why now with the recruiting target list, I just use 24/7 Sports. And that's really, quite frankly, what you should be going with. The composite was a sort of the industry standard because it involved more opinions and there was supposed to be more objective because of that. But now it actually gets skewed because you have that outlier in ESPN, which is completely just off the wall with their rankings, and they just, there's guys that they just don't have any idea about, Jordan Wilmore. I could name a list of guys that are probably not even in their top 200, and you're just like, wow, scratching your head, like, how do you not know about this kid? I mean, God. So yeah, I really wouldn't pay attention much to the composite rankings until they get changed, until something happens. I don't know how you would change it. You just have to dump ESPN, but then what? You're basically just doing Rivals and 24/7 Sports, which is kind of, do you really need to have composite rankings and only have two networks?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's sort of to explain how that all has come about and why we tend to go with the 24/7 Sports rankings. Because I think they are 100% more accurate. And I know I'm biased.
Yeah.
Okay. Settle down, relax. I guess I'm going on too much. Is it wrap?
That's the wrap it up.
The button there. That's the wrap it up. It's like I'm going to play a voicemail over you talking.
Right. Well, we got a couple more questions left, and we got a lot to do. So let's finish it up. Here we go.
Hey, this is Richard from Stevenson Ranch. This is on Friday before the SC game, and I do have a question. I hope you guys don't think it's stupid, but I'm really, really concerned about what's been going on with people like Jack Jones, Joseph Lewis, and now Yakeel Ross, Bubba Bolden, and the other guy. They've all been highly, highly recruited players, and I don't understand if it's something that they should have known with these guys coming out of high school or when they get into college that nobody's monitoring them. I'm just curious, Ryan, maybe you could answer the question or the coach, but it bothers me, and I don't think this is the way to start the season off. I appreciate it. Enjoy the show very much, and I'll call again during the season. Thanks, and fight on.
I kind of thought this would be good for you, Gerard, but, you know.
Team question, but, yeah, okay. Yeah.
I mean, because it was a talk about the recruiting impact and everything, you know.
Yeah, I'll take a whack at it. I don't know, quite frankly. I mean, a lot of major programs have issues, and they have problems. With USC, they're actually losing players. This is the difference. Jack Jones is gone. Joseph Lewis is gone. Bubba Bolden may be gone, although he popped up in the locker room this morning, as reported by various outlets. Scott Wolf reported it. I know you guys love Scott Wolf and follow him closely. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's an evaluation of character that is lacking with USC, because Clay Helton has been pretty good. I mean, he, of all the things you could criticize about Clay Helton, he's pretty much character first guy, and he's been pretty quick to make that move to get guys out of the program that he feels like could be cancerous. I mean, he made that move really quick with EJ Price. The other instances, their university matters, so it doesn't really, was out of Clay Helton's, wheelhouse anyways. He really had no control over, Joseph Lewis, what happened with him, or Jack Jones. But he's been very quick to get on top of that he doesn't have a lot of leeway with those type of issues behind the scenes. But I just don't know. I don't know. I don't have you lose players to these instances, and a lot of other things like that happened in the cross country that have been similar. Usually they're DUIs and they're things like that, and guys get suspended. And then there's a bunch of criticism about, it's Alabama, it's a football factory, they're not going to suspend anybody. Oh, it's Ohio State, they're a football factory, they're never going to suspend anybody, they're not going to do anything, it's football first there. With USC, there hasn't been a lot of instances where it's been in the control of the coach to sit a player or not. In the instances that it's been, Clay Helton's decision, he's been pretty decisive in how he's acted. And these other instances, these guys are just doing illegal things and they're getting thrown out of school entirely. It's a question of evaluating character, but I think it's tough to put it on those guys. I don't know if you could have foreseen these things happening, these kids just doing stupid things. It's tough, man. I don't know if I have a real clear answer for that.
And just to be clear, Bubba Bolden was in class this morning. I think Scott Wolf reported he's in the locker room, but he was in class. He put it on his Instagram, so you could, the fact that he was in class was
there. Question he also put, I think he put on an Instagram that he might have been even in the locker room. Somebody brought up is that you can't, if you're under a Title IX investigation, that you can't actually be a part of the team at that point. You can't be in the locker room. I don't know. I mean, what extent was he in the locker room? Was he just getting his stuff? I mean, you don't know. I've inquired about it. Everybody's been mum about this whole thing. I mean, it's been very tight-lipped. But that's when I knew immediately that it was going above Clay Helton's head. It was a university matter, and no sources that are close to the team are going to really talk about anything when it's a university matter. And so I don't know. It's a crazy thing. But Bubba Bolden's had some issues. I mean, he's had some housing issues and some things like, so this is not like his first problem, his first thing that's come up, an incident. So, it kind of goes back to the whole thing of, is it recruiting? Is it the recruiting process that needs to be evaluated? They need to get that sorted out. They're recruiting guys that are talented, but maybe there's some character issues. But like I said, that doesn't speak to kind of how Clay Helton holds himself. And it doesn't seem like the kind of team he wants to have, because he's been very quick on the trigger with guys that have had any type of character issues that have been expressed on the team within the locker room.
Yeah, 100%. We got one last one from Jim B. He said, great show. Keep up the good work. Should the NCAA be investigating Oregon's recruiting practices? I can't help wondering what's going on. Here's a program that hasn't been spectacular in the last couple of years. But last year they had some hope because they hired a real good coach. But he only lasted 1 year and then took the FSU job and had a really tough first game, by the way. Interested, instead of spending the money and hiring a proven winner, they hired an assistant who lost twice as many games as he's won in his only gig as a head coach. Yet this year, Oregon is recruiting better than the years when Chip Kelly was there. I don't see anything to convince me that Oregon will win big, and still the athletes are flocking there as if it was the promised land. Sounds to me like something is rotten in Denmark, or should I say Oregon. Fight on, Jim B. And for just Mario Cristobal, that was like a building a program, basically. So I a lot of people you talk to, even though the record doesn't look great, people felt like he did a good job there. But get your thoughts on all that, Gerard.
Wow. Dropping the hammer on Oregon, huh?
Yeah.
They win in July.
They win recruiting in July a lot, right?
Like, they've recruited very aggressively. And there's been some chatter about some things. They've hired some people behind the scenes that have some track records with the NCAA. And so I would say this, they're probably being scrutinized by the NCAA because of it. And, you know, we'll see. I don't, it's not my place. I'm not an investigative journalist when it comes to that kind of stuff. And certainly if I opine on anything that I've heard or seen or any kind of questions I would have about their recruiting tactics, it would be just painted as I'm a homer. And so I don't want to go down that road and get into all that stuff and start talking about allegations and circumstantial stuff. But it's something that's obviously out there. And it's interesting that they've recruited well. And the question really is, how well can they maintain those classes? It kind of fell apart of them last year. A lot of people close to the program feel like, well, that's because they lost the head coach and, this, that, and the other. And Willie Taggart's a good recruiter. But I don't know if it was all because just Willie Taggart left. I think, it also had to do with just the year. And it's sort of, the shine comes off a little, when you start to lose games and, the program is sort of in a certain place, and then, you go to Eugene and it's 50 degrees and it's raining. And it's a little different than it is in May. So, it's a lot of wait and see when it comes to that. I mean, UCLA was very similar in how they recruited with Jim Mora. They would start out very strong and they'd be great in April, and everybody would be crying and going, oh my God, UCLA's gonna recruit us and they beat us the last 3 years. And, USC's on sanctions and everything like that. And then the other year, it didn't turn out that way. Even when they beat USC, it didn't turn out that, UCLA really had that much better or even better recruiting classes than USC. So you kind of just wait and just see how the process plays through and see how each team plays and see the direction, the trajectory of each program. Right now, the trajectory of USC is up. And with Oregon, it's completely just wait and see. We have no idea. They didn't play well last year. They had quarterback issues, last year. But it's a recruiting staff that's kind of been putting together as recruiting staff. The real question with me when I look at them on the field is how does that come together? It's sort of one of those dream team type recruiting staffs that they got a bunch of guys that are good recruiters, but how does that staff kind of come together as a coaching staff on game days? Because that's more important. And sometimes, I just remember with UCLA when Rick Neuheisel went out and then he retained Wayne Walker and then he got Norm Chow and you're getting all these other coaches and you're kind of cherry picking a bit, but there's no cohesiveness there, and everybody talks about, they criticize Pete Carroll a lot because of the nepotism, because of him going after guys that he knew or guys that, there's coaches that he coached with or, they weren't far from the coaching tree. And the same has obviously come with Clay Helton, because the guys that he's brought in for the most part have been guys that are either, friends with his dad, or they're guys that he coached with at Memphis, or there were friends of guys that he coached with. Whatever the case may be, the thing that people don't take into account is that there's cohesiveness there, there's trust there, there's sort of like mindedness there. And that's where nepotism is huge in coaching, and it's huge everywhere in coaching. And yeah, I know Nick Saban goes out and gets the best offensive coordinator that he wants, and he goes and gets this guy. But he's got other guys that have been a part of the program for years and years that have been there that he trusts and that are guys that he knows. And that's always, especially in the beginning parts of a football program, that's what you're going to have, and that's what you have to have. And it's true of successful programs, and it's true of programs that that go on and end up doing bigger and better things. I think the frustration with Pete Carroll was probably he was at a point where people felt like he should have gone out and been able to cherry pick, because the program and the culture had been well established, you know, that many years in. When you're into like 2009, 2010, it's like, okay, coach, everybody knows what you like to do and how you like to do it. You can go out and get a good guy. Now, he did that with Jeremy Bates. That was the one, that was the funny thing about it, is that the one coach he went after, and everybody thought, well, this is great. This is awesome. We got an offensive coordinator. We got a real guy coming from the NFL. Worked under Mike Shanahan. Are you kidding me? He's the guy that Jay Cutler, he developed Jay Cutler. That was a catastrophe. That was an utter catastrophe. It was a catastrophe at USC. It was a catastrophe at Seattle. And God bless Sam Darnold. It won't be a catastrophe with the Jets, because now he's the head, he's the offensive coordinator with the Jets. But that just did not work out. So you kind of go back and go, well, you know, maybe Pete knew something by just going out and hiring a bunch of guys that were his buddies. That's the sort of how coaching goes. That's not something that's unique to USC. What's unique to USC is just hiring head coaches that have something to do with USC. That's something that you don't necessarily see in every other program.
That is very true. All right. Well, how long we go here? It's like hour and 40 minutes, hour 35 minutes. That's enough. I think we're ready.
That's good. We made up for lost time.
I think we're going to move on. Well, good stuff, Gerard. Thanks for coming on and doing this.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and thank you for everybody who's sending in questions. And as you guys know, if you have questions and you want them answered immediately, right now, Gerard, Jim, what's happening, just go to the Peristyle.
Yeah, go to the Peristyle. We'll get them all done there. All right, that's going to wrap it up. Thanks for being a subscriber. Thanks for a VIP member of USCFootball.com. We really appreciate it. And thanks to Gerard Martinez. I'm Ryan Abraham, and we will talk to you next time.